The KM Football Podcast. All the latest reaction and analysis from the KM Sports team. Listen every week and click subscribe on iTunes.
Welcome to this week's KM Football Podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Panting, and I'm once again joined in the studio this week by Steve Turvett of the KM Sports Desk. The odds are that our guest this week has played for a club near you. And if he hasn't, then there's still a fair chance he will. Gillingham, Eversley, Maidstone and now Dover have been his destinations in the county so far. He's won at Wembley with the Jewels, enjoyed last day survival to stay in the Football League with Wickham and endured playoff heartache at the Fleet. It's a warm welcome to Dover midfielder Stuart Lewis. Great to see you, Stuart. First things first, so we've got to gloss over the weekend's defeat against Maynard. We'll quickly move on. And Dover, obviously, just a point outside the relegation zone in National League. What's your assessment of where things are at the moment for Whites?
First of all, we've done very well. I think if you look at it from when we went in probably September to where we are now, we've given ourselves a real fighting chance. I think when I went in there, I sort of sat and spoke to my dad and I said, if we can be sort of in and around everyone by sort of January, February time and maybe even a point or two of survival, then that would be really good. And to be where we are and some of the results we've picked up is a real good task and everything that we've put together, but it's only half of the job's done really, and we've got a lot more to do, and big 11 games for us coming up.
I mean, you mentioned trying to get out there by January, February time. Were you surprised how quickly you did actually accumulate points when you first went in there? Also, and the Hess and Tyler effect of Andy going in as manager, but you seem to really pick up, I thought, a lot quicker than maybe most people expected.
Yeah, I think there was a few early games where we had like Dagenham at home, Braintree away, and I think people thought, oh, they're finished now. I think we had 7 points or 8 points, and then all of a sudden, I think we just the training kicked in, the fitness levels really started to increase, and we had a real sort of identity to our play, and people probably were underestimating us, thinking we wasn't a great side, and all of a sudden we got that momentum going, and I think that's still I know we've had a few disappointing results lately, but that's still going, and as I say, if we can finish the job off, and we've got a big 5-6 games coming up around people and teams around us, and if we can pick up a few good wins, I think it'll put us in good stead going into March and April, and yeah, I've really enjoyed it down there. It's a very well-run club, very well supported, and it's been a good few months for me.
Did you have to think twice about making that move to Dover, given where they were in the league? I mean, it was a gamble for sure.
Yeah, I think I've always sort of had that tag. I always sort of make moves that might be unexpected or come out of nowhere, and it was just something new for me and a new challenge. I'd nearly signed for Andy Hessenthaler at Eastleigh in the summer. I also had an offer more locally to me, but I really sort of wanted to work with Andy Hessenthaler. He's someone I made my Football League debut with, and I've sort of had a really good friendship with him and admired his career from afar for a lot of years. And obviously the offer of security came for myself and my family. I've got a new baby now, baby boy, who's 4 months. So yeah, I had to take that Maidstone. My contract was only till the end of April, and I'd had a great time there, but it was something that I wanted to challenge myself with and work with Andy Hessenthaler and give that a go.
There'd been a fair bit of change at Maidstone, hadn't there, just before you left?
Yeah.
Obviously, Jay had gone, Harry had come in. What was that period like?
Yeah, it was really tough for me, I think, because I'd had a strong personal relationship with Jay Saunders. He sort of gave me a chance when I was at Ebbsfleet, when I needed one really, and it was a league higher. And obviously, I think I sort of repaid him. We stayed up that season, and that was brilliant. But it was quite strange for me. Obviously, Harry came in and inherited a team and a squad. I was captain at the time, but I just felt the transition. It hit me quite hard personally. As I say, how Jay was treated towards the end and how things went was a little bit disappointing. But as I say, I had a great time at Maidstone and made some lifelong friends there, and the support I got was outstanding. But I just felt that at that time it was really tough after Jay leaving and how things had started to go for me even there as well. It was something that I wanted a new challenge.
How important is the relationship with the manager? You got on really well with Jay. Obviously, you and Harry, it wasn't going to work out, and you made the move. Does it have to be the right fit in terms of player manager?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think I think, to listen, probably there's a lot of players who probably who can just to get on with it. And when you look at throughout the leagues, look at Pogba now under Solskjaer, he's unbelievable. Harry was had new ideas. It wasn't anything personal towards him. It was probably more my own feeling of what I wanted to go and test myself somewhere else. Really, I felt that at that time. I just wanted something new, and that's how it went. And as soon as the opportunity came up and to go to Dover, I jumped at it, really.
Tell us a bit about, though, maybe some of the relationships you've had with your managers over the years, you know, positive and negative. Mark Stimpson was the, kind of the early one where he picked you up, didn't he?
Yeah, I think he was what he sort of, if you like, got me going. He was a really good man manager, and he just filled you with so much belief. And I think that it's underestimated now with managers. I think that man management and getting the best out of your players is key, because he'd sort of just make you believe that you were like 6 foot tall and go after people. And he was really infectious. He had this energy and infectious and a little bit of arrogance as well that you all need. And I felt that I came from Barnet to Stevenage with him, and I went from probably a player that didn't really know where I was going with my career at sort of 19 to all of a sudden, within 8 months of working with him, obviously he signed me at Gillingham and I was a League One player again. So he just sort of identified what I was good at sort of getting around, affecting the game, energy, sort of enthusiasm, affecting the other team with my pressing and even sort of trying to add a few goals to my game. But yeah, he just gave me a real belief and a sense of freeness and freedom that you need.
Because you'd been at Spurs Academy and then made the jump into senior football with Barnet, which I imagine was quite a contrast.
Yeah, all of a sudden you're going from, if you like, caviar to ham and egg, if you like. But no, it was a culture shock at 19. All of a sudden you go and you chuck your kit in the middle of the room and you're waiting to, where's the dinner? Well, there's no dinner here. It's like go to the local garage and pick up your sandwich or your coffee or whatever it is and things like that. So we trained at a school, and I remember walking, well, Andy Hessenthaler was there at the time, and there were some really good pros like Paul Warhurst, Nicky Bailey went on to have a really good career. It's a good side. And I remember walking in my boots. We had to like walk along a road to go to training, and I'm thinking, how's it got here? Like, I've gone from training on brilliant pitches to walking along, there's like a road in Potter's Bar, like Queenswood School, to go into training, and the pitches were awful. It was like, I didn't know what hit me, if you like. And then I went to Stevenage from that. I made 4 appearances for Barnet, I think, and didn't really hit it off there, but went to Stevenage, and that's where I sort of got my hands dirty, if you like, and really sort of bought into the culture of men's football and senior football. I'd take my Uncle Ben's packet of rice in, we'd put it in a microwave, or we had a week where we used to have to bring our own. It's like if it's squad numbers, so you had a week where you had to bring all the breakfast in for the lads, like the cereals, the toast or the bread and toast and things like that. And there was a real good culture in that dressing room, and Adam Miller was in there, Mark Arbour, Barry Fuller, Mark Beard, who had a good career. And I really just, I don't know, I just felt at home. It was a little bit lively at times, I'm not going to lie, and it was quite boisterous, but I think that's where I really sort of bedded in the fundamentals of what I've built my career on from there.
Yeah, tell us a bit more about that group, you know, being quite lively. What would go on?
Oh yeah, there'd be, well, that it was actually, I went there in I think March time, and then I probably played about 6, 7, 8 games, and we went to Wembley, and I bought into it. You know, it was some of the tackles that would fly in training. It, I remember Mark Molesley, who's now gone on to coach at Bournemouth, and like in pre-season, whenever I see him now, he goes, I've still got the lump on my leg from you. Like every time I play, like, I've got shorts on, I think of you. Like, so.
Because you were still a kid.
Yeah, I was 19, but Mark Stimpson, I just understood straight away that he was my competition. Like, I was in competition with Adam Miller, him, Mark Molesley, Johnny Martin, who'd had a big, good non-league career with Greys. And there was 4 midfielders, and I just remember going in and thinking, I'm going after you, like, and this is going to start on first day of pre-season. And I treated it like a game, and I used to fly around in tackles, and people just like obviously that everyone was the same really, and there was Barry Fuller as well. Obviously he loves the tackle and loves the aggression side of the game, and it would boil over sometimes. Me and Alan Julian, I remember when it going to put on one of my underarmers on in the morning, and because I think I'd probably, I don't know, put deep heat in his gloves or done something like that, I remember putting my underarm on and half of my sleeve was missing. So there was a few things like that going on with players. But no, it was a really good dressing room, and I look back at it now and I think that played a huge part in my career that time.
Going from Stevenage following Stimmo to Jules, I guess you took that what you learned about kind of growing up and the way that you conducted yourself in training and flying around, was that the same at Jules? You know, how did they take you there?
Yeah, I think it was obviously, I think he tried to install that quite quickly, but you know, once you, looking at it now with experience, when you go into a club, I think obviously with Andy Hessenthaler, what he's done at Dover now, sometimes change takes time, and I think that Mark Stimpson went into Gillingham and tried to say, right, we've got to have the same intensity or the same feel that we had at Stevenage, and I don't think that can always happen overnight. I think that happens with obviously your recruitment, who you bring in, and I think at times there was a little bit of the sort of the old players were still there and then the new players were coming in, and obviously they was on contract, so they wasn't going to sort of go anywhere. So I think that the transition year was quite tough. I went in there when we was in League One, and there was a lot sort of going on. The atmosphere wasn't great between the players. I think probably the League Two year, when we got relegated from League One, and the League Two year, I think he got more of what he wanted, and obviously it came off well because we got promotion. So, but yeah, I think he got that eventually, but probably wanted it quite quickly, and it didn't really work. So yeah, that's another thing that sort of I've probably realised through time. And everyone's different as well, and people probably see it and understand it in different ways.
What did those older players make of you launching into tackles?
Yeah, I had a few. I remember, I think it was Leroy Griffiths. Jill's fans will probably remember him. He was a real sort of extravagant character, and I remember, I think it had been raining and we trained on the at Priestfield, and I think there was a tackle went in, and I literally it was a lovely morning for a tackle, I slid through him and Sean Clahessy, and they both went flying, and I was up and running and gone before he could hit the floor, I think, Leroy. And he was a big lad, Leroy. He was a really big lad, and he came into the change room after, and I think he was having a shower, and he come into the, and I sort of walked in sheepishly, and he come out the shower, and he sort of there was a little bit of a set to, but yeah, there was that was a bit after a couple of weeks late. I think he knew that was my game and that was part of it. But yeah, I've had a few of them over the years where I couldn't get out of that one. I was like, oh, sorry, Leroy, like I didn't mean it, but no, I think
so. Was it more than a quiet word he had with you?
Yeah, it was. If it weren't for Gary Richards, I don't know if I'd be sitting here now. Gary, I travelled in with Gary and Adam Miller, so they calmed him down, but I think he would have, I think he pinned me up on one of the pegs in Priestfield Stadium. Like my feet were like dangling. It was like a scene from wrestling, and my feet were just dangling off the edge of Priestfield's benches. So no, obviously my sort of excitement and enthusiasm has got me in a few scraps over the years.
Yeah, but you haven't changed, have you? You haven't sort of been you haven't shied away from those confrontations.
No, I think that's been part of my game and part of who I am, really. I wouldn't change for anyone. This is how I am. I would say I've mellowed slightly. I think sometimes there was a point when I'd come into the dressing room and I'd go mental all the time, and I think that just wears off eventually and becomes a little bit boring. But I've still got, even this morning I'm training, I'm flying around, I get the ump because Innie Effingong's giving me a little bit of banter that I'm on the losing team, and Jay Reason giving me a bit of banter. So yeah, that'll never go out of me. And as I said to you earlier, Nicky Southall joined in as well this morning, and he's still got that edge, and you need that edge. I think
do you think you need that, particularly in the situation that you're in at the moment? You've been in sides that have been in relegation fights in the past. Is it important to have that, like, within your squad if you're going to get out of trouble, big characters as well?
Oh, definitely, yeah, because there's going to be times, obviously, unfortunately we lost on Saturday at White Maidenhead, but there's times when, well, in the next 11 games, there are going to be situations, or there's going to be a point where we are going to be behind, or there's going to be an important part of the game where you're going to need that. And I think that at any level, not just in the National League, but League Two, League One, Championship, Premiership, you need them characters, or you need, like I spoke about, that team spirit and an edge, because football, no one's going to give you the 3 points, or no one's going to say, oh, go on, Dover, you stay up with 55 or 54, but whatever you want. And it's not easy. And I think, obviously, when I went into Maidstone a couple of years ago and we did it there, it was we had a real togetherness and a real characters that got us over the line.
Mm. Just to go back to the time at Gills, you came down from League One, you eventually won promotion back from League Two.
Yeah.
Wasn't always plain sailing for you that season, though, was it, on a personal note?
Oh, no, it was probably one of the strangest sort of seasons of my life, really, because obviously I'd signed from Stevenage, I was only 20, 21, and as I say, I'd expected to go in there with Mark Stimpson, and our relationship was fractured at times. I was never sort of shy to knock on his door and ask where my career was going, and I was probably a pain in his backside most weeks, and I sort of dipped in and out. I had a really good game at right back against Ashley Young in the FA Cup. I got the nickname Ginger Cafu, and because it was on ITV, and I remember the week before me and my dad was watching him against Julian Lescott when he was at Aston Villa, and he roasted Julian Lescott, and then Martin O'Neill come on the pitch and he said, oh, you're a genius, and my dad looked at me and I thought, oh god, I've got him next Sunday at prime time on ITV. So, and I was playing right back, so I think Barry Fuller had pneumonia at the time, and we were scratching around for a right back, and I sort of gingerly put my hand up and was like, I can do it. And then all of a sudden I'm playing against Ashley Young, who was going to Man United a few weeks later, or at the end of that season. But I had a really good game there. I think I probably earned my time in midfield, which came later. But yeah, I was very in and out, really. I think I played about 20 games that year. But as I say, I put a transfer request in I think March. Mark Stimpson, I was always, as I said, I never really took a backward step with decisions, so I went in with my letter, I gave it to him, I sent one to Paul Scally. I'm quite brave, really, when I think about it now, 21, like sending transfer requests in, but I'd got to the end of my tether with it a little bit, and I just thought, you know what, I need to go and play and get my career going. And then I think that probably gave him a little nudge. And then all of a sudden, I got my shirt and I kept it till Wembley, and the rest is history, if you like. And yeah, it was really good.
It's quite a dramatic turnaround, isn't it, really? I mean, 2 months from handing in a transfer request and leaving, and then playing in a winning team at Wembley.
Yeah, as I say, like how I am and how I've been brought up, and my dad is as well. I just sat there and I said, I can't have another season of this, really. It wasn't nothing against the club or anything like that. It was just personally, I wanted to go and play, and I knew the importance of playing. And I think he brought Josh Wright in, and it just gave me the ump, really. And I was like, I'm not having this. Like, another midfielder's come in. I was sitting on the bench and up at Grimsby, and I looked at it and I thought, do you know what? I know I could offer something to this team at that time. So I put the transfer request in on the Monday. Spoke to Paul Scally in his office at Priestfield, and I said, look, Chairman, it's nothing against you or the club, but I just, this is not for me. Like, I can't be in and out like this. And he's like, look, Stuart, you'll get a chance. And the manager said that as well. But I do think on a personal note, that sort of lifted something off my shoulders. I felt like the weight just lifted, and I was like a different player. All of a sudden in training, I was back to that old Stuart Lewis, if you like, from the early time at Gills and at Stevenage. And then I think I got my chance at half time at Wickham. I think we lost, or it was 1-0 or 1-1, and we didn't play that great. And then on the Monday I started against Dagenham over bank holiday, and I think I got man of the match. And from then, as I say, in April I got player of the month for the KM, and I really sort of hit my straps. But that's what football's like, isn't it? You can go from sort of feeling like you're never going to be part of it, and then 6 weeks, seven weeks later, you're winning at Wembley, and I played in both semi-finals. I played in the final, obviously, and yeah, it was probably the highlight of my career.
How's the timescale work? Gives an insight into, you know, you hand a transfer request in. Does the manager call you straight in? Does the chairman call you straight in? You say you went and saw Paul Scully. Does that happen quite quickly afterwards? And when does it get resolved? Is that like one meeting and you're done? Or how's it work from the player's perspective?
I think really, I knew that I probably had to do something quite sort of like a dramatic, not dramatic, but I knew I had to do something to catch attention. But it wasn't even attention, it was more so to say, look, I probably need to go and have a fresh start, and that's where I'd got to. But from, I think I went in on a Monday, I gave one to the manager, I'd sent one to the club secretary Gwen, and then I took one into the chairman as well. Well, the chairman requested to see me, and I said, he said, look, we think a lot of you here, you are young and things like that. Within, I'd say, a week or two, I had my chance. And then, because you're playing well and you keep your shirt. And I think it was after Wembley evening, Mark Simpson said, what are we going to do about that transfer request? And I said, I think I'll take it back now, like laughing. But after that, obviously, we was on a real high, and I think I'd prove my worth to them, and they had to me as well. Like, they gave, Mark Simpson gave me the chance. He could have quite easily said, oh no, that was, but I think they probably understood where I was coming with it and the sort of character I am. They know that I sort of don't take a backward step, if you like.
How much satisfaction did you get from winning at Wembley as well? Not just in the sense of, you know, it's your greatest moment of your career and every child's dream, I guess, to go to Wembley and win a trophy, but the way that things had gone at Jules, the relegation before, the accusations towards, you know, no doubt towards yourself as well, but towards the Mark Stimpson group almost, that a non-league player stepping into the Football League. There was a lot of animosity at the time towards you, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was. I think there was. I remember the sort of like the non-league tag a little bit, and I thought I had a really good time at the Jules, and I loved their support. I thought it was really, once it got going, that Raynham end, there's nothing like it. And it was tough. It was, because obviously I was part of that, although I was only at Stevenage for a short time, but they saw me as someone that Mark Stimpson had bought and brought in. And so, it was probably at that time, I think, they sort of really took to us, and they thought, do you know what, they do work hard, they do want the best for themselves, the club, and I thought we represented them in a really positive light. Sort of Barry Fuller obviously got the captaincy from Andrew Crofts, who was a sort of favourite of theirs, but I think Barry sort of proved as well over time that what he was about. And I think they sort of, that was the time when it was a real, as I say, not just on a personal note pleasing, but for obviously Mark Stimpson and everything that he tried to do, it was a real happy, good day, really.
Obviously, it all ended sour in the end for Mark and the following year, the relegation.
Yeah.
Are you surprised that Mark's then remained in non-league football, almost? That you'd think that, you know, he had a great reputation from Stevenage times and how well he'd done there, but it's never really gone on, has it?
No, I think when he was at Stevenage, I think he had countless offers of MK Dons, Leicester. At the time, there was loads, and I think maybe geographically, location, Jules sort of was a perfect fit for him at the time when he left Stevenage. I am surprised that he hasn't probably kicked on from there, but I think he's at Hornchurch now, and I think whatever he does, I'm sure he gives it his best. But as I say, it's a tough world out there, you know, like you, especially for managers. And when you're hot, you're hot, and when you're sort of cold, you're cold. And I think it's hard to sometimes shake certain reputations or whatever it is. But no, I thought that at that point we played really good football towards the end of that League 2 year, and it was exciting to watch, quite sort of forward thinking, and a lot of he believed a lot in the fitness work and things like that. So I think he did okay at Barnet, obviously went to Kettering, but yeah, I've been surprised that he probably hasn't even got sort of a non-league job where he could mould himself again. But he might do. He's still young. You know. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and yourself, when you left Jules, how did that come about? Because obviously it was the end of the relegation season.
Yeah, I wasn't involved in the last probably 5 or 6 weeks again. I think me and Mark Stimpson both compared it. If, like, with a girlfriend, no, you keep arguing and then you make up, then you argue, and then you make up, and in the end you think, we're not really happy here. Like, and in the end you have to go your separate ways. And I think that's what happened with me and Mark Stimpson. In the end, we just probably had too many highs and lows, and he got fed up with me and I got fed up with him, really. And in the end we just went our separate ways, and No, yeah, it was in the end. He said to me, look, there's no future for you here. I think John Steele's interested in you. And there's a few other offers. I'm sure you'll have a few other offers, and which I did. But yeah, I think I'd sort of done my time a little bit at Gillingham and with Mark Stimpson. And then I sort of went on to further my career from there. But yeah, all in all, my time at Gills, as I say, it was a brilliantly supported club. I had the highlight of my career there, but I still feel that there was more to offer, and more they see some good parts of me, and but not probably regularly enough and consistently enough. So that's where I've got a little bit of hinge of disappointment, because as I say, I think I could have shown more, and I could have give a little bit more to the club.
Do you almost think, on the way you summed yourself up at Gillingham, it's almost you summed Gillingham up in a way, that they have good bits and they also have bad bits, don't they? They sort of rock between League One, League Two, but never consistently flirt with the top of League One, shall we say.
Yeah, as I think, obviously, I know we said at the start of the show how many Kent clubs I've had, but it is such a good place to play football, and there's such a passion for it in this county. And I think at some point, obviously in the conference, I hope there's another team gets into the league, because I think there's a real, as I say, a real drive and desire for that to happen. But I just feel sometimes with Gills, it's they sort of get there, and then it's, I remember last year they had a little good spell and then they just drop off, or this year you think, go on, like, are you going to push on? And then they don't. So it's, as I say, it's a very well supported club. And as I say, well, I know when we went to Wembley, they took, was it 35,000, 40,000? So it's unbelievably backed as a club. So I always keep an eye out and to see how they're getting on. And I hope that in time they can have a real good year and get in and around them playoffs. And stay up this year, you know.
You mentioned John Steele was interested in you at that point. He was at Dagenham and they'd just gone up into League One, so he stayed in League One with them briefly.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I went and met him. They was actually in the playoffs in League Two at the time, so when I met him while he was, their season was still going on, but ours was finished with Gillingham. And then I went to meet Gary Waddock as well, who was at Wickham. But because of League One football, and I was still only 22, I think, at the time, I just wanted to stay as high as possible, and I chose to go with John Stewart at Dagenham. I signed a 3-year contract there, but it lasted 3 months and I was out the door.
How did that go south then?
That was my own doing, that was probably. As I say, I played at Hillsborough in the first game of the season up at Sheffield Wednesday. I'd had a really good pre-season, tough pre-season that was. Oh, he could really beast you, John Steele. It was that first morning of pre-season. It was like, right, on the line, boys, like, no warm-up. I was thinking, oh, blimey, we're going straight into this. Like, bleep test. So you're doing your bleep test at May and Baker over in Dagenham, and you're thinking, oh, that's us for the morning, if you like. No, over to the track. There was like obviously the 400 metre athletics track, 6 laps, and you're thinking, blimey, I've done a bleep test, now I'm doing 6 laps. And that was just the morning session. And then afternoon, it was this big square for ball drops, you have to start again. So that was a real good pre-season, and I think I was really fit at the time, and I was flying. So I built my way into their team, which was a promotion winning team, so that was good. But yeah, things didn't really work out there. I had a disagreement with Terry Harris, the assistant. I was playing at right back actually in a reserve game, and although I'd done well against Ashley Young, I didn't really want to play there. And I sort of told him so at half time, because he said I didn't defend the winger well enough, or I didn't do something. So I told him a few expletives, if you like, and things went a little bit south. And the next morning, John Steele said, you'll never play for this club again. But I had 3 years left on my contract, so I had about 7 or 8 weeks in limbo, if you like, training with a youth team. It was real tough, like a tough, challenging time, but I kept, like, obviously my fitness up and like getting on the treadmill and things like that. And my opportunity, lucky enough, came to go on loan to Wickham with Gary Waddock, who had been interested in me in the summer. But I think at one point I was like, oh, I don't know where this is going to end, you know, like this is a tough time, like you don't know what's going to happen.
Fair to say you're quite an emotional person. There are those flash points as we look throughout your career and confrontations. Have there been moments where you've said something and regretted it, or look back and think, well, I, you know, I wish I'd held my tongue, etc.?
I think with that one at Dagenham, no, because I think when I look back at it now, I went to Wickham and I had a brilliant time at Wickham. And if that wouldn't have happened, then not that I planned it or anything like that, it's just that how it happened, I'm glad it did. There's been a few times when maybe I just thought I probably could have dealt with that a little bit better, but I think sometimes, like, when you are how you are, that's it really, and you get some right, you get some wrong, but I think I live by sort of I behave with my heart on my sleeve. I'm quite an emotional character. If I'm happy, I'm happy, and when I'm disappointed, and I think it's quite obvious that I am, and I think you can hide that a little bit better at times. I could hide it better at times, but I think that's just how I am a little bit. And
do you think the time that you had at Ebbsfleet kind of epitomised what you just said about when you're happy and it's going really well, you were fit and playing well,
definitely,
and when you weren't happy, blimey, it went the other way?
Yeah, it did. Yeah, that's probably a good sort of good way to sort of sum it up, really. I had a great time at Ebbsfleet. When I think about Ebbsfleet, I do have a smile, if you like, because I really enjoyed my time there. I just gutted that I wasn't part of the team that got, I know they got promotion that season, but because that year that Sutton pipped us probably sort of really hit me, because I got player of the season that year, and I played, like, me and Godden had played the most games, and I was gutted when we lost to Maidstone in that final. It's probably right. When it was high, and when it was low, it was, like, under Jamie Day, I probably didn't play as well as I could have, and then towards the end with at my time there, I just knew that me and Daryl McMahon wasn't really seeing eye to eye, and my time was coming to an end there, and I just don't think I can be that sort of person that, when I know that I haven't got someone's backing or that belief, I'm not the same player.
Because you'd played with Daryl earlier in your career.
Yeah, at Stevenage,
Initially, what was it he liked to play for?
Initially, I thought I was going to be gone.
When he took over from Jamie?
Yeah, because I came in under Jamie Day, and obviously he was captain before, Daryl was captain before, then I was captain. I took the captaincy over from him, and I just thought, with all this transition, I thought he's going to want his new crop and things like that. And I'd have probably understood, really, but I had a year left on my contract, and he sat down with me and he was honest, and I respect him for that, because it must have been tough. I'd played with him and I knew him personally, and he said, look, Stu, you're going to be part of my plans. Like, you might not think you are going to be, but you will be. And I think what changed it for me, I went on, which is unbelievable, I think about it now, we went on a weeks-long tour to Portugal in the Conference South. Never been known in National League South history to go on a week's pre-season to Portugal. But I went on that plane, and it's a bit similar to maybe how I have it in my, like, early career, and I thought, I'm going to be the best player on this trip. I want to train my absolute legs off and go for it every day, and I did. And I think I was, like, one of the best trainers on the trip, and I played in the game. And I think from then he must have thought, do you know what? I know that Stuart can offer a lot to this team and this club, and he obviously backed me, really. It was good.
And then that season, how do you reconcile your own personal form, which was really good? The fact that, I think you made a flying start, didn't you? Took 10 or 11 wins at the start of the season. You were out top, and then Sutton just gradually reeled you in, and then the playoffs, you know. How did that season get away from you?
We went into the playoffs without momentum, and our momentum was probably, as you say, before Christmas, just after Christmas. But I think we the dynamics of the team changed a little bit. I think we had, like, Jordan Parks playing really well before Christmas, Kissock, we were playing like a diamond, Dean Rance in front of it, me to a side, Kissock, Jordan Parks in the hole, Godden, and Kedwell obviously was brilliant that season, as always. And I think we had a real good dynamic, and then things changed a little bit. We brought maybe looking back at it now, because we had the opportunity to go and sign players, and it was quite sort of easy to go and sign them because of budgets and because of what we could do, we did that. And I think sometimes it might have needed just a little tweak here and there rather than two or three players, and we just never really we never really hit our straps again, and we'd win when you'd expect, and then the tough games we couldn't quite get over the line. And as I say, Sutton had a, they had a great run and they deserved to win it, but as I say, we went into them playoffs and I don't think we, yeah, we sort of just went over the line really, and as I say, Maidstone beat us in the final. But that was a real, real disappointing time for me. I look back on that and that was something that I always think about, and it really sort of annoys me.
Yeah, how do you deal with something like that? And you get so close. I imagine you can remember that moment at the end of extra time where the ball was popping around the box. There was a chance to clear it, and eventually Maidstone score, and then they go and win the shootout.
Yeah, I never normally. It's funny in my career, like when in big moments like that, and you watch. And I've watched it back, like time and time and time again, and I'd do anything just to have that, like obviously like any like you would in certain situations, just to clear that ball. Like, I think it was near me, and I couldn't quite clear it. Or I remember Matty Godden maybe run into the corner, and I went with him. Like, why didn't we keep it in the corner? It was that close. Or like the cross, why didn't we stop the cross? Or whoever missed the header. And I've watched it through so many times, and I think. Listen, it's football, and it's why everyone loves it. And Maidstone got promoted, and it probably worked well for me, but it didn't, because at the time I was, as I say, gutted, because we'd put so much into that, and I thought for Darryl's first season it would have been brilliant to get that promotion. And I made some really good friends at Ebbsfleet off the pitch and on the pitch, like Tom Bonner was excellent, Danny Kedwell's a good friend of mine, Jordan Parks, Kissock, really good people, Kenny Clark, Dean Rance, some really good blokes and good footballers. Matty Godden was outstanding that year. So I think we did deserve to get promotion, but there was just the big moments too many times that season we fouled on. And we paid for it in the end, you know.
So you've lost the playoff final, you go away for the summer, then you come back and start preparing for the next season. Was it just not quite the same for you after that?
Yeah, I think looking back on it and being honest, I think it took a lot out of me, that defeat against Maidstone, and I came back in and I probably didn't have that edge. I had a few little niggles, injuries. I had sort of like a couple of hip problems, and I never probably got back to the height of the year before, and I knew that myself a little bit, and I was trying to get back there, and it didn't really work out for me that season. And then obviously we got to Christmas, and I could probably feel that I needed again a fresh challenge, and that's where it got to.
Was it one where the relationship with Darryl just deteriorated a bit?
It didn't deteriorate. I just think that I thought where how far we'd come sort of together, and even knowing him for so long, we sat down and the way he sort of managed it with me, I think Charlie Sheringham and a couple of others, I thought was quite, it lacked a little bit of integrity, or it was his decision, and I'm fine. Darryl, I've seen him since, and we speak, but I just thought that at that time it could have been dealt with a little bit with more integrity, and it was like banished to another changing room, and things like that. And I think football and life's too short to do that. Just say to me and Charlie, look lads, you're not part of my plans, I'm going to go another route, this is how I'm going to do it, fair enough. But when you're sort of put in another changing room and things like that, I just thought that wasn't needed to be done, especially what I'd give the year before. I knew I wasn't part of his plans going forward, and quite rightly, because he won that league, they got a promotion for the playoffs, so it was a good decision to get rid of me. But I just thought that it could have been dealt with a lot sort of more professionally and things like that. But listen, it worked out good for him and for me, really. Yeah. So that's football.
It's interesting you mentioned the pre-season tour to Portugal, which the club did a few years running. Having been within Ebbsfleet and the culture that they had at the time, and it was, you know, fairly lavish, doing things like that were out of the ordinary for a non-league football club. And then to come to, you know, outside the club and then looking in, obviously there's been a lot of changes. They've had to restructure this year. How do you, you know, reflect on what it was like then, and you know how they're going now?
It was just unbelievable, really, when I look back at it now. And for people outside it was sort of unbelievable. So I'd say to we're going to Portugal for a week, and Millwall were doing 4 days. It was just it was crazy, like some of the things that was going on, and but it was good to be a part of, you know. And I thought that it was tough that first time when Jamie Day took over, because there was so much like media coverage, and non-league's quite a tight-knit community. And I think that obviously it got blown out of proportion, what Keds was earning and what us other league players who'd played in the league were earning and things like that. And I think it just got all blown out of proportion. But every game we went into, it was everyone's cup final. So I think that everyone was up in their game, because they're thinking, if we play well, we might get a move here, or oh, they're earning this, so you've got to get into them and things like that. And so it was quite difficult in the early times. But when you look back at it, some of the, as I say, the spending and what went on was extraordinary. But it was I thought Peter Varney was outstanding for it all. I thought he was excellent. I thought that the way he run the club, and he always had such a professionalism about him, and I thought that he kept it like with a real class.
How did the move to Absolute come about, though? Because obviously you were playing at the time League Two football with Wickham.
Yeah.
And then you moved mid-season. Obviously could have been any club that you went to. You could have stayed, you know, possibly stayed League Two, but maybe National League. But you go one level below to South. Was that something, you know, when you heard Ebbsfleet football, or don't know anything about them, or was you aware of what was going on there and what journey they were trying to be on?
Yeah, I think that, as I say, at that time at Wickham, Gareth Ainsworth had took over, and I was in and out a little bit at Wickham. And then my friend spoke to me, who knew Peter Varney, and said, this is what they're offering to you. And again, going back to that security, I'd only had that season left at Wickham. And as I say, I was a little bit in and out. And then all of a sudden, I spoke to my mum and dad, and it was a 2.5-year contract. And I thought, you know what, it's football. And sometimes when you're offered that security at our levels, it's hard to turn down. And maybe being 27, I think I was at the time, it maybe was a little bit too early, but it was something that I wanted to go and be part of, as something that was fresh and challenging. And of course, that I'm not going to go away from it. The security that was getting offered to me, I couldn't turn that down. And I knew it wasn't sort of hot air, because people like Peter Varney wouldn't have been involved in it. And that's why now I think it's a shame. Well, like, listen, they're still going well, and they're still solid National League club. So, but I think that the spending has had to calm down, and they've had to sort of cut their cloth accordingly. But at that time, it just felt like, this is so exciting to be part of. And when you speak about the stadium, the new stands, you think, do you know what, why not go and try that? I probably underestimated it a little bit, if I'm honest. Of course, like you do, because it's not, we were talking about the Conference South earlier in the National League, people underestimate it. It's not, they're not easy levels, but it was something exciting and challenging, and I don't regret it. Maybe a little bit too early, but no, I don't regret that move at all. I had a great time there.
It was an interesting move, of course, going on loan initially to Maidstone, the team you've been desperately trying to beat just a few months before, but it seemed to click straight away.
Yeah, it did. I think, I don't know how I heard, but I knew that Jay Saunders liked me, so I haven't had an agent for about 6-7 years now, so I do all my own contracts, me and my dad, and we send them to a solicitor or whatever it is, and we go from there. And I just rung him. I said, "Hi Jay, it's Stuart Lewis. Would you be interested in taking me on loan?" And I'll have a go at him actually later, because he took about 3 days to ring me back. But no, he rung me back and was like, "Yep, Stu, the deal's done. You're coming on loan till the end of the season. Be at training at 5 or 6 o'clock." And that was strange, because I'd never done evening training. Yeah. So it was really really strange. So I went down to Maidstone, and my first game was Torquay at home, and I played well, I had a really good game. And then we just went from there, really. I just felt at home straight away. Yeah.
So going without an agent, I would imagine you're in the minority of players at your level that does things for yourself, you know, doesn't have an agent to sort out contracts. Why did you decide to get rid of an agent?
I just think that I had a really bad experience. I think it was probably when I was at Wickham. And one of my friends is an agent, and But an agent I was with at the time, I said to him, oh, this manager, Chris Wilder at Oxford, he liked me. I knew he'd always, after a game, shake my hand and say, oh, well played, Stuart, or whatever it was. So my contract was up at Wickham the year we'd just stayed up in League Two. And I said to my agent at the time, oh, I know Chris Wilder likes me. Can you give him a call? So anyway, he said, yeah, I will. Run me back. No, he doesn't want you, blah, blah, blah. So then my friend, this is the time when I was in and out of Wickham, said, I'll give him a call. Like, if say he might take you on loan. So he's rung him. He said, oh, I didn't know Stuart was available. I didn't know. He said, oh, he was on a free in the summer. But I thought, oh, my agent had said that he'd spoke to him, but he hadn't. So I think from that day, I just always thought, well, if I've rung you, Steve, or I've rung you, like, I know if I've rung you or not and spoke to you. If you say no, that's fine. Like, you might not want me, you might want me. And I think from that day, I've just always, me and my dad just do, I take my dad with me as a bit of moral support, if you like. And I send it to, as I say, I send it to a solicitor, and I'd rather just have that, no, I don't want you, or yeah, I want you, and I can hear it, rather than a third party telling me. So,
and that's probably helped you, I'd imagine, because as a footballer, particularly a professional footballer, if you've got an agent and people around you, can be quite a sheltered life where people are looking after you and doing things for you, whereas if you're out there in the real world, so to speak, and you understand things like contracts and the legal side of it, they're good skills to have.
Yeah, I think so. I think, listen, if you're Harry Kane or you're dealing with the Nike, Adidas, and you're dealing with chairmans and this and that, listen, you're probably at the point where you need sort of top class representative. I'm not saying that, but I think there's also a point where everyone knows the going rates, what people earn and what you should be earning or not earning. And if I can do that, just myself, then I'll do that. Now, I don't think there'll be too many more deals going, but I've felt a lot better doing that the last few years, because it gives you more peace of mind. And that story, it's done and dusted now, but I just think for some young players, their agents will just say, yeah, I've rung him, or I've done this, I've done that. But you don't know if they have. Or I think they feed players too many stories, if you like, rather than just honesty. And are they talking about their game? Are they saying, are you living right? Are you training hard enough? Are you doing this? Are you doing that? Because I think a lot of agents just talk about sort of, oh yeah, I can get you here, I can get you there. Well, no, why are you not playing at wherever you are? Are you doing enough in training? Are you, I don't know, are you doing extras after training? That might sound busy, people call me busy, but it's not. It's like younger players probably looking at too many excuses rather than saying, right, do you know what? Am I being honest enough with myself, rather than, like you said earlier, having a group of people around me that are they then looking after you when you leave a Championship, Premiership club, or League One or Two club? I don't know if they are looking after you, you know. So
that's the thing, isn't it? Because obviously there are good agents and there are not so good ones, but whoever it is, having good people around you as a player who've got your best interests at heart.
Yeah, and honest as well. Like I mentioned, my dad a lot in this. Like, one thing he's always been with me is honest, and I think that's what I'm like as a person as well. If I've spoke about different people and managers throughout this, but one thing that I think they can all say is that I'm honest, and some have been to me as well. So I think that's the key to it, isn't it? Like, honesty in what you do and things like that. But yes, any lads out there that want a little bit of advice, no chance. We've got that'd never be anything for me. That so.
Just for people listening to the podcast, Stewie's got his Tottenham top on with his initials on it. So we should talk about your coaching. How did you get into that side of it?
It was when I went to Ebbsfleet that we were training 3 mornings a week. So obviously there was quite a lot of time. When we had we had off, like the Wednesdays and Fridays. So John McDermott, who was my England, I played for England as an under 16 and 17. He took me there, and then he also came to Tottenham when I was a second year, I think. And he'd always kept in contact with me throughout my career when I was at Wickham, Gillingham, and places like that. He'd always touch base like every couple of months. And then I just was like badgering him, I'm doing my B licence, I'm doing it, this and that. And out of nowhere, he just said, I'll come over and just observe or whatever it was. So I went over, had a meeting with him. And I think it was the season that Daryl first took charge, I'd go in and join in with them on a Wednesday and Friday, the under 18s and under 23s. And I wasn't coaching, but I was just watching Kieran McKenna now, who's the assistant to Solskjaer. He was the under 18 manager. So I worked, I'd get his bibs out, or I'd get his poet, and then I'd join in his sessions and things like that. And I was just there quite a lot. And it's just gone from there, really. It's gone from strength to strength. I've done my A licence and youth awards, and I take an age group there now. So I take the under 13. So it's just gone on from there. And I think that's probably changed me as a player and a person. I look at the game a lot differently, and I think I respect. I respect like sessions more. I respect, as I say, like training habits and all them other things, because you're around or you see what obviously the top players do, or you see what a top club does. So it's probably rubbed off on me a little bit.
And you've had chance to work with some great people, including Ugo Ekiog, who we sadly lost. Was he someone you got to know quite well?
Yeah, because obviously I'd probably either train with the 18s or 23s, and Hughes at the time took the 23s with a player that I've been in my youth team with me, Matt Wells, who now takes the 18s. But I'd go with them at least once or twice a week, and I'd go to their games with them, and we was really close at times. So you're there a lot. And the night before he passed away, we actually took the under 16s together. We was walking back to the changing room, and he was like training to do a marathon, or he's training in Switzerland or something like that. And he's like, oh, I'm going to go for a jog, Stu. Like, can you just see the boys off? And I was like, oh, yeah, no problems, Hughes. I'll see you. I think this was Wednesday. I said, I'll see you Friday or whatever it was. And then like, the next morning, I saw it all come up. I couldn't believe it. Was only with each other the night. Like, Oliver Skip, now he's playing for Tottenham. Yeah. He was in that under 16s group with Paris Magoma and some boys. And I think about it now, and I think it was like an evening, or today's been a lovely day. It was like that lovely evening in I think it was April or whatever, and it was just such a shock. And that's what makes life so short, and you've got to enjoy your times playing and coaching, because you don't know what's around the corner.
I remember Jay Saunders gave you a bit of time off, maybe a game off, something like that. Must be so hard to deal with.
Yeah, I think it was the Saturday after I'd been coaching with him on the Wednesday, because I couldn't believe that, like that night before, I was with him walking back, and you're talking about, it was actually talking about Skippy at the time, who's now gone on to play for Tottenham, and what do you think of him and this? And we was just chatting normally, like you do with coaches and friends, if you like. And then obviously the next day he passes away, and it's just it hits you a little bit. But he would have been proud of what I'd done at Maidstone and Dover now. And he even joined in training a lot, and he was brilliant. Like the blocks he got on his long legs, he'd just make such great blocks, and he'd come out with such like invaluable sort of knowledge that you don't realise. And the top level players think the way he thought was like, you don't realise how the top players think. And Scott Parker was also coaching at Tottenham, and they just think in a different mindset to probably a lot of people. And yeah, it was brilliant to get to know him. So,
time then for a roundup of the week's action for our teams. A late goal from Regan Charles Cook handed Gillingham a 1-0 win at Wickham in League One. It's a result that lifts the Jewels 5 points clear of the relegation zone ahead of their trip to Fleetwood on Saturday. International League, Dover, as we've already mentioned at the very top of the podcast, a point outside the drop zone after their defeat at Maidenhead, while Ebbsfleet picked up a creditable point against Barrow. Dover host bottom side Braintree at Crabble on Saturday. Fleet entertain Salford, who are 7 games without a win, and Maidstone alive on the box, their game at Solihull kicking off at 5:20 for BT Sport viewers. Stuart, we've got to mention the game this weekend against Braintree at Crabble. A couple of mixed results lately, as you said earlier, for Dover. So a really big game for you against the team at the bottom of the table.
Yeah, huge game. I think we've got Braintree, Bournemouth on Tuesday at home, and then I think we're away at Hartlepool. So yeah, massive game against Braintree. It's not going to be easy. I know they lost to Aldershot on Saturday, but they've had some positive results. They beat Salford the week before, and as I say, we know it's not going to be an easy game. No games in the National League are ever given, so we've trained hard today, and we'll be attacking Saturday.
Maidstone, of course, had the FA Trophy on their mind this week. Their tie with Stockport went to a replay, with the Stones missing out on a semi-final against AFC Fylde. Stuart, got to talk about Maidstone. Obviously, we've not really touched them a great deal. But obviously, you went there and had great times staying up, of course, in the National League. You're disappointed with how they're going this season and the way, you know, Jay left, obviously, earlier on. Harry Wheeler went in there, didn't really work. And, you know, it's not looking very good for them, is it?
No, it's... I had a great time at Maidstone. I've got a real, as I say, I made some lifelong friends there and had a real brilliant time there. Disappointed to see where they are at the moment, but they are such a well-supported club, and how they took to me when I was there was different class. We spoke earlier about the Ebbsfleet final, and once I went there, I realised how they beat us. Because they had such a spirit and such a core togetherness, and I think that's something that Jay Saunders built over time, and they never knew when they was beaten, or even when we was there under Jay, like we never knew when we was beaten. We had such a good togetherness. My dad, Pigsy's dad, would travel on away journeys to on the train with Craig Tucker, and there was such a family togetherness feel, and Jay Saunders was the big part of that. And that's what he built there, and that's what it was built on. I don't think it got the appreciation maybe it should have at times, because people probably didn't realise what he was doing behind the scenes and what he had created. But you had obviously like Wolves, Maidstone legend, but real characters in the dressing room, Fisher, Tom Mills, and people like that were what Maidstone were about. And then obviously Pigs came in and he loved it, and we still speak now, Reece Prestige, some real men that he always had in the dressing room, Jamie Coyle, people like that who knew what it was about. And I think that they've probably lacked them characters, if you like, this season, people that represent what the club are about on the pitch. So yeah, no, I loved my time there. I hope that in time they can come back round and things like that, but still a long way to go in the season.
I guess that's the danger, isn't it, in the National League, particularly for clubs who like Maidstone's, and like Dover, you could argue to an extent when Chris Kinnear was there at the start of the season, is your recruitment in the summer has to be spot on, doesn't it? If things don't start well, if your players are cherry picked by the bigger teams as well, it's a real dangerous level to be at in that regard, isn't it?
Yeah, I think my disappointment goes back to probably last Christmas, because we'd had a brilliant start to the season. Joe Piggott was on fire, Zavon Hines was playing well, we was all playing well, we had a real good team and a solid core to us. And I think Piggs left, Zav left, and I think the money maybe that we'd saved from their wages, also the fee we got for Piggott, maybe could have been used to bring recruitments in. No disrespect to who came in, but they probably wasn't to the standard or the level that we needed. You look at the results at the time, it was always a goal in it or a draw, or it was, and I know people go, it was 18 games without a win. Well, we lost Joe Piggott and we didn't replace him. We lost Zavon Hines, didn't really replace him, you know. And I think that's the disappointing thing for me, that we got over the line last year and we stayed up, but it was always, oh, we should be doing better in the National League. Well, we didn't do 52 week contracts. We sort of, Jay Saunders could have quite easily come out and sort of protected himself, but he never did, and that's why I've got the utmost respect for him, because I think for what he'd done at that club over time, it can never be underestimated, because we were going up against teams that had budgets that blew ours away, and that's what probably this year they did do that. They bought Jake Robinson, they've invested now, but I think that could have been done last Christmas, and it wasn't, and life goes on, football goes on, and now where they are.
You mentioned Jay Saunders there. We're going to Bostic Premier next. The Jay Saunders effect continued as Margate boosted their survival hopes with a 3-0 success at Corinthian Casuals. Tunbridge went down to Mersham, while Folkestone were also beaten 2-0 to fellow playoff chasers Enfield Town. Tunbridge visit Enfield this weekend. Folkestone are at Carl Shorten. Margate make the journey to AFC Hornchurch. Bostic South East, the fight for survival heats up with Sittingbourne, Herne Bay and Faversham all collecting 3 points at the weekend. Whitstable are now looking nervously over their shoulders. They're just 5 points above bottom side Greenwich after a 3-0 home loss to Horsham. And the FA Vars took centre stage for the Southern Counties East League with both Canterbury and Cray Valley winning their quarter-final ties. Congratulations to them both. Cray Valley won 3-1 at Willand Rovers. Canterbury beat Biggleswade 2-1 on Sunday. Good news or bad news, depending on which way you look at it. They've been drawn against each other in the semi-final, so there will be at least one, or there will only be one, Southern Counties East League side at Wembley come May. But, you know, best of luck to those two teams over the two legs when they play. Stuart, I'll go back to Wembley because honestly it's going to be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for them. Was that the way you viewed it when you was in the playoff final with Jules? And what's your memories maybe of the build-up to it and, you know, just the whole Wembley experience now?
I think when you're younger, you think that big days are going to happen quite regularly. And it's probably not immaturity, but you think, oh, this has happened quite quickly, or I'm getting a chance to play at Wembley, and you think they're gonna keep coming, and they haven't. But that was just a great week, really. I think I had like 50 or 60 people travel from my house. We had a big coach take everyone down from the local pub, and there was so many requests for tickets, and I think we stayed at. We stayed in St Albans the night before. You sort of know you're going into a big game. I shared a room with Josh Wright, and I think we didn't get sleep till like 2 or 3 in the morning just for excitement, you know, like ironing your tracksuit the night before, and it's got the Wembley sort of League Two Wembley final, and it's such great memories. I sit back now and it was a brilliant feel. Like, you go and see Wembley the day before, and the pre-match walk and everything about it takes so much from you. But as I say, yeah, great memories, and something that players sort of at our level that don't always play at them sort of stadiums cherish for forever.
Now, just before we let you head up to Spurs to coach those youngsters, a few quick fire questions to finish up. I want to talk about initiation songs. Firstly, your own. When you've moved to a new club, there's often an initiation. Have you had to get up and sing? And if so, what's your go-to?
I've actually changed it up over the years. That's a good one, actually. Night before at Stevenage, they was in the FA Trophy final, the first ever competitive game there. I sung Elton John, Your Song. And then when I went to Wickham, I did Rod Stewart, Maggie May. And then at Maidstone, I did Stand By Me. So it's a little bit, I think I've heard that in my career about 150 times, good and bad, Stand By Me. I've heard Craig Dobson, who was at Stevenage, was unbelievable. And then I've heard a few others, not so good. But yeah, I've varied it up over the years, Steve.
I'm going to say, who was the best of teammates that came into your dressing room?
Jack Paxman, just in general, I think he thinks he's Justin Bieber. So he's got a good... good few songs up his sleeve.
Of your current squad down at Dover, who's the biggest selfie taker?
Bobby Joe Taylor. He likes him and Jamie Allen. They're like a little partnership, a bromance. So I think they both I can imagine them on the way home doing a selfie together or a little picture for Instagram. So yeah, them two, they like a bit of social media.
And who's the joker? Who, you know, playing practical jokes and stuff like that?
Josh Paisley's quite lively. Yeah, I think we need to up it a little bit at Dover. Lee Walgan's a good friend of mine. But he's getting a bit old now, Walgs. His banter's getting a little bit ancient. Yeah. So there is some good characters in there.
And just a final one, if I put you in the dugout for a minute, you're the manager of Dover and you can sign any player in the National League. Who would you go and get to strengthen the team?
That's a brilliant question, Steve.
Thanks.
A goal scorer, because I think goal scorers are so important. So maybe two Dannys, Danny Rowe or Kedwell. I'd take them. Kedwell, because you'd have him with you every day of the week, whether it be home, away, good pitch, bad pitch, good weather, bad weather, he's always to the front. and probably that row because he just scores all the time. And Joe, what annoys me about him, he never celebrates because he scores so much. I think, why don't you ever celebrate? Like,
just another one.
It's just another one, yeah. I think I hate that when players don't celebrate. It annoys me because I think that's one of the best things in the world, scoring. So,
What about when you go back to former clubs? Some people make a point of not celebrating, but you know, others don't worry about it at all.
Yeah, I think you've got to celebrate. I think it's, listen, you give everything to that club while you was there, and obviously they've paid your wages, and obviously you owe them a lot. But still, scoring a goal, it's not personal to that club, is it? It's just your own personal pride, and for your team now. Like, I think that you can overdo it if you're taking your shirt off and done what when you added by your, do you remember he ran the whole length in the knees? Like, I think you're overcooking it a bit. But yeah, you've got to celebrate, because as I say, there's no better feeling than scoring or winning, you know.
Have you got a celebration lined up for your next goal?
Oh, no. Yeah, probably. I don't know. Yeah, I've never really had a celebration. I like that. I couldn't do it, obviously, Maidstone, if I ever scored there, the knee slide, because I'd smash my knees to pieces. But yeah, I haven't really thought of it. I may have my little boy. I haven't scored since I've had my little boy, so maybe something to do with with Georgia or something like that. But yeah, I scored, when was my last goal? For Maidstone, I think last year against Sutton or something, so I'm due one.
Talking of being due, I mean, what's happening down at Dover? Because it's a host of babies we've seen over the weekend, Lee Morgan and Jay Reason as well. So
yeah, it's been a baby boom at Crabble.
The talk of the dressing room, is it?
Yeah, it is. I think some of the younger lads, like Danny McNamara, I don't know what's hit them. They've gone from being at the under 23s, all probably talking about their latest designer wash bags and trainers, to now what's the latest
nappy
bugaboos
chair
and things like that. Yeah, so no, they were brilliant news for Jay Reason and Lee Walgan, who are good friends of mine, obviously at Maidstone, from Maidstone as well. So I think the gaffer as well, his daughter had a grandson, Moussa Diarra, Beds, we're expecting Scott Doe. Yeah, it's been crazy, really, the amount of people. I think the manager's getting fed up of it himself now. I think if he ever signs a player, like, is your wife due a baby? Like, cause I'm getting, we Jay Reason didn't play Saturday, and Lee Walgan wasn't there either, because their wives were in labour or just out of labour. So I think the gaffer wants to steer clear of people players that have got pregnant wives.
The chairman might as well, if you've got to build an extra hospitality suite for everyone.
I think that's what we're going to say to him, Jim. We need a new creche for Crabble, because we've got a lot of buggies coming in.
Brilliant, Stuart. We're going to have to wrap it up there. Unfortunately, time has beaten us once again. Thanks very much for coming in. It's been absolutely brilliant listening to the tales from your career, and best of luck for the rest of the season with Dover. Hopefully, you stay the right side of that relegation line.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Thanks to everyone who has listened this week. Don't forget, you can subscribe on Audio Boom and iTunes, and keep up to date with all the latest sports stories throughout the week on our website at kentonline.co.uk.
The KM Football Podcast. All the latest reaction and analysis from the KM sports team. Listen every week and click subscribe on iTunes.